Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, May 26th. Permian production isn't silver bullet. Shale explorers show no sign of riding to rescue to counter rising prices. The story was written by Kevin Crowley, Paul Takahashi, and Sheila Tobin of Bloomberg. In a world crying out for more oil, a dusty stretch of West Texas and southeastern New Mexico is one of the only places that can deliver. But even with crude above $100 a barrel, producers in the Permian and other U.S. shale basins are riding the brakes. For most of the past decade, the Permian was an unstoppable drilling machine. Its vast, low-cost reserves helped transform the U.S. into the world's swing oil supplier, primed to turbocharge output as soon as prices soared or to halt when they collapsed. Because shale producers amassed a backlog of wells that could be tapped in just a few weeks, a crude rally was sure to incite a fracking frenzy that would help replenish global stockpiles and cool off prices, but not this time. After Russia invaded Ukraine in late February, crude prices surged to a 13-year high. Gasoline is above $4 a gallon in every U.S. state for the first time. Jet fuel in New York spiked to a record last month. Yet shale explorers show no sign of riding to the rescue. Their business model was fundamentally changed, reshaped by pressure to curb growth and divert cash to investors with dividends and buybacks. Inflation is also taking a toll. U.S. oil output this year is expected to expand by less than half the amount it did in 2018, when crude traded around $65. That means more pain for consumers, with J.P. Morgan Chase & Company predicting U.S. gasoline at $6.20 a gallon by August. Quote, "The U.S. oil and gas supply system remains very potent, but at any given price, growth will be smaller and slower," said Raoul LeBlanc, Vice President for North American Upstream Oil and Gas at S&P Global. Quote, "Without the subsidy that shale shareholders provided, consumers can expect to pay higher prices," end quote. Publicly traded independent oil companies, which produce more than half of U.S. crude, are now giving about a third of their cash flow back to investors. This means shale needs a new pricing floor of about $60 to $70 a barrel, up from $40 to $50 a barrel previously, to enable drilling broadly across the major U.S. oil plays, according to S&P Global. The pressure to prioritize shareholders over production is a direct result of the industry's pre-pandemic grow-at-any-cost model that, according to Deloitte LLP, led to nearly $300 billion of cash burn over the previous decade. Though shale output will rise this year, forecasters say there's minimal additional growth coming as a result of the war in Ukraine, despite the rally in crude prices. The U.S. will add about 900,000 barrels a day of oil production this year, according to the average of five major forecasters, S&P Global, Rystad Energy, Bloomberg NEF, Enverus, and the U.S. Energy Information Administration. That compares with 1.9 million a day in 2018. This year's growth was planned before Russia's invasion of Ukraine, but analysts only see a modest increase of about 800,000 barrels a day next year, which would finally bring U.S. output to pre-pandemic levels. In the field, operators say forecasters' current estimates may even be too optimistic. Several OPEC producers, meanwhile, are struggling to fill their output quotas, leaving the global crude market increasingly tight. Wall Street isn't the only source of shale's growing pains. The global supply chain crisis is particularly acute in the Permian Basin, which will make up 80% of this year's U.S. production growth, according to research and data firm Enverus. Disruptions to equipment supplies mean if a company wants to increase production, it would now take a year or more between drilling to pumping oil, up from 3 to 4 months before the pandemic. Linhua Quan, CEO of Permian driller Surge Energy, said in an interview. Quan planned for 16% cost inflation this year and says that will increase next year. As a result, Surge expects a 12% annual production growth rate this year, down from 29% in the 12 months through the first quarter. Even so, Guan expected the U.S. subsidiary of China's Shandong Xinchao Energy Company will make record profits this year if prices remain elevated. The cost of casing, a lining that helps to stabilize wells, is 3 times higher than usual, and lead times to fill orders are much longer, said Dina Domboski, vice president of operations at Permian producer Upcurve Energy LLC. Quote, rig rates are higher than I've ever seen them, at more than $30,000 a day, she said. Pioneer Natural Resources Company, a major Permian driller, expects the cost of contracts for new rigs to rise as much as 40% next year. Quote, it's just more difficult to get some of the key products that we need, whether that's pipe or sand, said Travis Thompson, CEO of Firebird Energy LLC, a producer active in the Permian's Midland Basin. Quote, if we wanted to increase activity, say from 3 rigs to 4 or 5, we would certainly have to plan on that a lot further out than what you would have had to a year or two back, end quote. America's oil production increased by 7.05 million barrels a day from 2012 to 2019, adding new output equivalent to Iran and Iraq combined in just 8 years. OPEC failed in its multiple attempts to sideline shale producers by allowing prices to crater. And yet, U.S. shale now has little hope of replacing the estimated 2 million to 3 million barrels a day from Russia that are either shut in or deemed untradeable because of sanctions. Quote, the Russian production supply gap is too big for shale to fill in alone, said Al Salazar, senior vice president of Enverus. Oil field constraints and producer discipline limit shale's ability to cool prices this year. The jump in oil and gasoline prices has helped drive U.S. inflation to the highest levels in decades, and it's becoming increasingly clear that shale is no longer the silver bullet to counter skyrocketing crude prices. President Joe Biden appears to have abandoned public calls to encourage U.S. drillers to boost production, a key focus for his administration earlier this year. He's now considering meeting with Saudi Arabian Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, according to people familiar with the matter. Quote, the Permian is going to be there to help, Pioneer Natural Resources CEO Scott Sheffield said at Hart Energy's DUG Permian Conference in Texas last week. But, quote, is that going to save the world? Not with what happened in Ukraine, he said. A&M says top dollar for area homes. County sales yield similar results in April after record-shattering month in March. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The Texas A&M Real Estate Center showed Midland County followed a record-breaking real estate month in March with a nice encore. The center showed similar price levels in April compared to March and price increases compared to April 2021. Bottom line, the average price of a home sold in Midland County was $368,000, and the median price for a home sold tied the record for any month, $325,000. The increased prices also meant the dollar volume of homes sold in Midland County topped $100 million for the seventh time in history. The center also showed that Midland set a new record for dollar volume in back-to-back months, $233 million. Record-breaking prices, or those near the top of the price scale, are something common around the state, according to the Real Estate Center. In Ector County, Odessa, new high marks were set for homes sold, 199, dollar volume, $52.4 million, and average price, $263,000. Other price marks in April from around the state included median prices of $310,000 in Bexar County, San Antonio, and Harris County, Houston, $366,000 in Tarrant County, Fort Worth, $370,000 in Dallas County, $550,000 in Collin County, McKinney, Frisco, Plano, and $625,000 in Travis County, Austin. Travis County also showed an average price of $790,000 in April. Other notables about the Midland County market included the 294 homes sold was tied for the fourth most of any month on record, and actually three houses below the 297 sold in April 2021. April was the 44th straight month that the average price for a home sold topped $300,000 inside Midland County, a streak that goes back to September 2018. April was the 11th straight month that the median price for a home sold topped $300,000. The number of homes on the market jumped from 518 to 560 in April. The inventory rose from 2.0 to 2.1 months available. Realtors previously told the Reporter-Telegram that potential buyers are wanting to purchase because of the possibility that interest rates will continue to increase. They also said a lower inventory compared to 2020 and 2021 is a factor in price increase. Voters give Anderson birthday present to remember. After a lopsided win, she's ready to deliver change voters want. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Diane Anderson had a memorable birthday on Tuesday. It rained, which in Midland these days is notable, and she knocked off the longest-serving representative on Midland's highest-profile boards, county, city, and school district, to become the Republican nominee for county commissioner, Precinct 4. But from what Anderson told the Reporter-Telegram on Wednesday, incumbency was not in his favor. Quote, "I kept hearing on the streets that we need change," Anderson said. "They wanted change," end quote. Incumbency, as it turned out, provided no privileges for Randy Prude, who is finishing his sixth and final term on the Commissioner's Court. He learned what Midland ISD's James Fuller, the city's Spencer Robnett and Michael Trost, and the county's Robin Donnelly have learned in recent elections, and that is that term limits aren't necessary when the electorate votes for someone else. Anderson's victory was lopsided. She collected more than 66% of the vote and nearly doubled up the incumbent's vote total in a precinct that includes parts of central and northwest Midland. She admitted that she felt good about her chances Tuesday as she collected the most votes in the March 1st primary. Anderson eventually will join a commissioner's court in transition. Gone after November's general election will be Donnelly and Prude and their decades of experience. Jeff Summers and Anderson, take their place on a board that will look different than when Mike Bradford was county judge in 2018. Quote, I think County Judge Terry Johnson is looking forward to being able to get things done that he couldn't get done in the 4 years, Anderson said. She added that the election will bring about expectations on the new court to produce. Johnson sent a statement Wednesday to the Reporter-Telegram congratulating Commissioner-elect Anderson on her victory. Quote, she worked hard to win the support of the voters in her precinct, Johnson wrote. I look forward to working with the new Commissioner's Court in 2023 to chart the course for Midland County's future, end quote. The reworking of a horseshoe operator's contract is an obvious example of the change that residents can expect. However, the to-do list for the county also includes water delivery, road construction, infrastructure development, and the building of new or rehabilitated law enforcement justice complex facilities. The court talked about a new jail this week, and Anderson told the Reporter-Telegram she agreed with those, including Prude, who would like to see the county use a sales tax increase to pay for those law enforcement justice complex improvements that could climb beyond $200 million, depending on what county leaders want to build. Anderson also said that her leadership in Precinct 4 requires communication with constituents. She said she hopes that people will communicate with her. She said those conversations will help her determine the right course and know what voters want and what they see as bad government. Quote, I want them to call me so we can talk about it, Anderson said. People need to let the elected officials know what they're unhappy about. They need to reach out. None of us elected officials can read minds. Nothing will change unless we hear from the citizens, end quote. With the win, Anderson moves into pretty rare territory as someone who, when she is sworn in, will have served on two of Midland's three highest-profile boards, county, city, and school district. She talked about being so mad about the old cluster system when she ran for school board more than 20 years ago. Quote, I helped get rid of it and moved on, Anderson said. 20 years later, she was motivated to seek public office again. Whether it was the horseshoe or disagreements with the current seat holder, Anderson was again unhappy about the situation. And Tuesday, voters made an emphatic statement that she needed to be involved and gave her one heck of a birthday present.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, May 21st. Award honors work on area's seismicity. Bureau of Economic Geology, Railroad Commission, earned recognition for effort to reduce earthquakes. The story was written by Mella McEwen. A surge in seismic activity has shaken up residents throughout the Permian Basin who have been rattled by earthquakes of 3 magnitude or greater. That surge has also shaken up oil and gas operators and regulators who have scrambled to address the issue. At its 2019 legislative session, the Texas legislature created the TexNet Seismic Monitoring System, overseen by the Bureau of Economic Geology. A series of earthquakes greater than 3 magnitude prompted the Railroad Commission to establish Culberson Reeves and Gardendale seismic response areas, telling operators to reduce injection volumes and pressures in those areas. For their work addressing seismicity, the BEG and RRC have been awarded the Bruno Hansen Midland College Environmental Excellence Award. The award was presented during the Permian Basin Environmental Regulatory Seminar on Thursday at Midland College. Quote, the Railroad Commission is honored to be recognized with this award, which reflects our ongoing commitment to protect residents and the environment in the Permian Basin, Andrew Keyes,
spokesperson for the commission, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Quote, thanks to collaboration with the BEG and their TextNet Seismic Monitoring System, RRC closely monitors seismic activity and has been able to work with stakeholders, including operators, and take actions when needed, as the response plans for our seismic response areas show. We will continue that important work. End quote. Scott Tinker, director of the BEG and state geologist of Texas, told the Reporter Telegram by email, quote, all of us at the Bureau of Economic Geology are honored to be receiving this prestigious award, recognizing the work of our TextNet Earthquake Monitoring Program and Center for Integrated Seismicity Research Teams. We now have a much better understanding of the earthquake activity in the Permian Basin, and in partnership with our colleagues at the Railroad Commission, have taken important steps toward mitigating the impacts of these seismic events. End quote. Aaron von Evera Welch, director of Midland College's Petroleum Professional Development Center, commented to the Reporter Telegram by email, quote, this year's Midland College Bruno Hansen Environmental Excellence Award is a testament of a successful synergy as the RRC and BEG have been able to make great strides together in a relatively short time frame. Their collaborative effort with seismological research will have a lasting impact on the current operations and future pathway for our Permian Basin petroleum industry. End quote. Gretchen Bakke, daughter of the award's namesake, Bruno Hansen, said he would be proud to have his name associated with the two recipients. Quote, if you have felt rumblings in your home in the past years, you may have wondered if you actually were feeling an earthquake. We can thank today's recipient of the Midland College Bruno Hansen Environmental Excellence Award recipients for the hard work and dedication they have brought to our area and other parts of Texas and southeastern New Mexico. Between the collaborative efforts of the Railroad Commission of Texas and the Bureau of Economic Geology, TextNet Seismic Monitoring Program can help keep the public informed about the earthquake activity, she told the Reporter Telegram by email. My father, the late Bruno Hansen, would have been so proud to have his name and this award associated with these outstanding organizations. He spent his life enjoying the outdoors with his geologic knowledge and his passion for protecting the environment. I am proud to have been a part of the Midland College PPDC committee. Mark Hankhouse, a member of the award's advisory committee, told the Reporter Telegram by email he finds the recipients especially fitting this year. Quote, this year, the Hansen Award to the Railroad Commission of Texas and the Bureau of Economic Geology is especially fitting when considering the industry's vested interest in solving the induced seismicity puzzle and balancing industry need for disposal capacity with the agency's priority of protecting the public, he wrote. The seismicity issues experienced in the Permian Basin are not unlike those seen in North Texas or Oklahoma. The difference now is that the agencies, in coordination with the industry, moved quickly to establish a clear path to allow the E&P sector to solve the problem with the RRC and BEG's guidance and support. The RRC's attention to permitting, the BEG's research, and TextNet's seismic data and arrays all work together with a common goal of understanding the induced seismic events and reducing their magnitude and frequency. This cooperative effort should be held as a model for state and federal agencies, showing that collaboration and common goals are achievable. This teamwork is an outstanding example of what Bruno Hansen stood for. End quote. Fellow Advisory Committee member Richard Brantley, a
of university lands, observed that the award often marks a new environmental stewardship milestone. Quote, "The Bruno Hansen Environmental Stewardship Award is often presented when a new milestone of environmental stewardship occurs," he told a reporter telegram by email. As this year's recipients, the Railroad Commission and the University of Texas Bureau of Economic Geology are being recognized for their collective collaboration, which is enabling the first operator-led plan to reduce seismicity in the northern Culberson-Reeves counties. The efforts of all stakeholders involved represent a new milestone in collaboration, which will provide greater insights regarding the relationship between water disposal and seismicity, and is an effort which should be recognized and appreciated by the citizens of the Permian Basin," end quote. Stephen Robertson, Executive Vice President of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association and an advisory committee member, told the reporter telegram by email that the collaboration between government, academia, and private industry, spearheaded by the two recipients, is an example that should be emulated in a number of other challenging areas. Quote, "Not only has the endeavor to grow seismic monitoring in West Texas been pioneering, but by working with a variety of stakeholders, it has shown what success can really look like through a private-public partnership. Where we are now, however, could not have been achieved without the vision and drive from the Commission and the BEG. Their leadership is the only reason the network we now have, the monitoring we now have, and the response we are now able to engage in is even possible. Finding new ways to be responsive to environmental concerns while still supporting industry growth is fundamental to receiving the Bruno Hansen Award," Robertson wrote. High Peaks acquisitions help boost oil production. The story was written by Mella McEwen. High Peak Energy continues its work developing its Howard County properties. The Fort Worth-based firm announced last month it has agreed to acquire the Howard County assets of Hanathon Petroleum and other non-operated working interest owners. The acquisition, expected to close in the third quarter, will allow High Peak to accelerate the pace of its Signal Peak development through leveraging infrastructure in place and approximately 150 net locations and 18,600 net acres. During its first quarter earnings call, the company said net production, including the Hanathon acquisition, averaged more than 28,000 barrels of oil equivalent over the 7 days ending May 16th, up from their first quarter sales volumes of 12,052 barrels of oil equivalent. Company officials attributed this growth to accelerating development, bringing new wells online, and returning associated offset wells that were temporarily shut in due to completion activity to production. High Peak recently began drilling with a fifth rig at the end of the first quarter and intends to maintain Hanathon's one rig on its acreage. The company recently brought online one Wolfcamp A well, one Lower Spraberry well, and three Wolfcamp D wells at Signal Peak, the performance of which are meeting or exceeding management's expectations. At the end of the fourth quarter, High Peak had 36 gross, 3.5 net horizontal wells in various stages of drilling and completion. During its earnings call, High Peak issued updated guidance saying it plans to operate 6 drilling rigs and an average of 2 to 3 frac fleets throughout the rest of 2022, assuming commodity prices and rates of return remain attractive. High Peak Chief Executive Officer Jack Hightower said, quote, "We are extremely excited about our highly accretive Hanathon acquisition and our recent encouraging multi-zone well results in Signal Peak.
We have great confidence and excitement for the future of this area and its increasing importance to our growth trajectory moving forward. Our current pro forma production is approaching 30,000 BOE per day, and at today's prices, our EBITDA run rate is approaching cash flow neutrality and will transition to positive free cash flow in the second half of 2022. End quote. Kara Kara Battalion starting joint acid treatment venture. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Traditional ways of handling the carbon dioxide, CO2, and hydrogen sulfide, H2S, are being replaced by more environmentally friendly methods. One example is a joint venture between Battalion Oil Corporation and Kara Kara Services to develop an acid gas treatment and carbon sequestration facility in Winkler County. It will operate as Brass's Amine Treater, LLC. Quote, traditionally, operators have released the CO2 and with the H2S flared it, which creates sulfuric acid or acid rain, Todd Lechtenberger, chief operating officer with Kara Kara, told a reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. The facility, scheduled to open in the spring of 2023, will have an initial capacity to treat 30 million cubic feet a day of natural gas for CO2 and H2S with combined concentrations of up to 10%. It will have the capacity to capture and sequester more than 50,000 tons per year of both H2S and CO2. It will utilize an acid gas injection well, the Hutchings Sealy No. 4, which was drilled and completed to 18,250 feet and permitted for the injection of acid gas. Quote, we're stripping those materials out of the gas stream and sequestering them, putting them back where we found them in an environmentally friendly way, Lechtenberger said. That will leave pipeline quality sweet gas to be delivered back to Battalion or other producers to deliver to midstream providers. The service, he said, will help operators be more carbon neutral and meet their ESG, environmental, social, and governance initiatives. Clayne LaCrosse, Kara Kara Chief Executive Officer, told the reporter Telegram the company pivoted to such services during the recent downturn caused by the pandemic and amid changes in environmental initiatives. Quote, we looked at how we could contribute to environmental changes, he said, settling on contributing to capture and sequestration. He said the move made sense given the concentration of operators in the Permian Basin. Establishing the facility, quote, lets the process be efficiently developed, end quote. The project has been in development for the last 18 months, with an additional 6 months before construction is complete next February and the plant comes online. Already, there is talk of a second phase adjacent to the Nuke facility with a capacity of up to 30 million cubic feet. It would serve Battalion and other operators in and around the Monument Draw area of Ward and Winkler counties. Lechtenberger said the company is also looking at ways to not just sequester the CO2 and H2S, but to utilize them. He said there are also talks with producers on creating custom niche solutions to handle their sour gas. He noted that the company's custom treatment plans will be located closer to the wellhead, offering producers greater operational freedom and choice of processors. The industry has really embraced the movement to eliminate emissions, said Lechtenberger. Quote, we're looking at ways to not just sequester, but to put them to use in an environmentally friendly way, end quote. The two see the deal as a win-win-win, not just for the environment, but for producers and consumers. The facility can take production from fields that aren't as developed because of the low quality of the gas, remove the H2S and CO2, and return marketable gas to producers who get to sell more product to consumers who now have access to more product. Quote, "This is an opportunity for the oil and gas industry to take a truly environmentally friendly approach to developing fields," said LaCrosse. In a statement announcing the joint venture, Battalion Chief Executive Officer Richard Little stated, quote, "This agreement is a key milestone for Battalion as we transition to profitable growth and further balance sheet improvement. Not only does it provide a comprehensive solution for our current and future sour gas treating needs, but it does so while considerably reducing our operating costs. We are very excited to break ground on this project and look forward to seeing it operational in early 2023. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, May 26. Betty Holland, age 86, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, May 24, surrounded by her family. The family will receive guests from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Thursday, May 26, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, May 27, at Waleshire Park Baptist Church. Graveside service will be held at 3 p.m. Wednesday, June 1, at Resthaven Memorial Park. Betty was born on June 19, 1935, in Brownwood, Texas, to Verna and Aubrey Allgood. She met Rex Holland at Coggin Park in Brownwood, and they married on June 4, 1952, just shy of 70 years ago. They moved to Odessa, then Robert Lee, then landed in Midland in 1955. Betty is survived by her husband, Rex Holland of Midland, son, Gordon Holland, wife Jetty of Claremore, Oklahoma, daughter Risa Fisher, husband Pat of Midland, as well as several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Betty is preceded in death by her father, Aubrey Allgood, mother Verna Coley, and brother Charles Allgood. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Beverly Jean Gideon, age 73, passed away on Saturday, April 23rd in Corpus Christi with her loving family by her side. Beverly was born in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma on April 12, 1949 to parents Stanley and Merlene Brock. She was one of four siblings. She married James Robert Gideon in 1969. They remained happily married for 52 years. Beverly is preceded in death by her parents, Stanley and Merlene Brock. She is survived by her husband, James Gideon, children Jeffrey, Jeremy, and Joshua, as well as several grandchildren. She is also survived by her brother, Steve Brock, sister Glenda Calloway, and brother Keith Brock. There will be a celebration of life on May 28th at 1 p.m. at Great House Clubhouse in Midland. Beverly is entrusted to Funeraria del Angel Everhart at 4901 Everhart Road in Corpus Christi, Texas. The family requests those who wish to express sympathy to consider making a donation to ProjectCharlie.org in Beverly's name. Kim Hamilton Hunter. Funeral ceremony will be at 11 a.m. Friday, May 27th at the Trinity Bible Church at 4936 East Interstate 20 Service Road, South Willow Park, Texas. Kim passed away on Sunday, May 22nd. Kim was born on Tuesday, December 23rd, 1975 in Jordanton, Texas, and grew up in Divine, Texas. Kim is survived by her husband, Matt, son, Hodge, and daughter, Holt, of Aledo, Texas, older brother, Jeffrey Hamilton, and family of Art, Texas. older sister Stacy Speranga and family of San Diego, California, parents George and Gail Hamilton of Divine, Texas, brother-in-law Mark Hunter and family of Midland, sister-in-law Michael Erdworm and family of Midland, in-laws Herb and Debbie Hunter of Midland. An online streaming link of the service will be provided on Kim, Stacy, Gail, and Michael's Facebook pages and on the GP Funeral Chapel's website on Friday the 27th. Willie A. Goudeau passed away at home on May 22nd. Willie was born January 28, 1922, in Goudeau, Louisiana. He was the son of Willie F. and Effie Maxwell Goudeau, now deceased. Willie graduated from Evergreen High School in Evergreen, Louisiana, in 1938. He attended Louisiana State University and graduated in 1942. While serving in the Army, he married Marguerite Clark Moreland of Big Cane, Louisiana, on June 26, 1943. They were married for 69 years. After leaving the service, Willie went to work for Chevron and then worked 37 years, retiring in 1985. Willie was preceded in death by his wife, Marguerite, his son, Ronald Eugene Goudeau, and his brother, Philip. He leaves three sons, William Glenn Goudeau and wife Peggy of Mount Pleasant, Texas, Timothy Allen Goudeau and wife Marion of Midland, John Nathan Goudeau and wife Sherry of Colorado Springs, Colorado. He also leaves two daughters, Antoinette Goudeau Nichols and husband Dale of Lecanto, Florida, and Anita Renee Goudeau of Midland. He also leaves seven grandsons, two granddaughters, and 14 great-grandchildren. The family will receive friends from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday, May 26th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Memorial services are scheduled for 11 a.m. Friday, May 27th at Golf Course Road Church of Christ. Private family burial will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. No flowers, please. Any monetary gifts may be made to the missions ministry at Golf Course Road Church of Christ and or Hospice of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
Good morning, this is Kim. I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, May 26th. Odessa rallying around Uvalde following tragedy. Ector County Sheriff's Office collects more than $10,000. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said he still tears up after seeing the news about the horrific mass shooting that took place Tuesday afternoon at an elementary school in Uvalde that left 21 people dead, including 19 students. Hours after the most recent Texas tragedy, Griffiths announced on his personal Facebook page that he would collect funds to donate to charity causes in connection to the Uvalde shooting. Griffiths stated in the Facebook post that as of 7:23 p.m. Tuesday evening, that he had already collected $1,000 from sheriff's office employees. The number skyrocketed as of Wednesday afternoon to more than $10,000. Griffiths said he will continue to collect funds through today as he is going to hand deliver the donations to the Uvalde County Sheriff's Office on Friday. This money is never, ever going to fix some of the grief and the horrible things going through people's minds, Griffiths said during a phone interview on Wednesday afternoon. We felt like we needed to help in some way. This was the quickest way that I could figure out to make that happen. If at some point they need other things or another person down there, we will drive down there and help them. It's such an awful circumstance. It's beyond belief. My heart goes out to them. Texas Governor Greg Abbott, during a Wednesday press conference, says as a state we need to do better with mental health. He also said the gunman who killed 19 children and two teachers at an elementary school warned on social media minutes before the attack that he was going to shoot up a school. Abbott said the shooter, 18-year-old Salvador Ramos, used an AR-15 in the attack Tuesday at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde. About 30 minutes before the shooting, Ramos made three social media posts. According to the governor, Ramos posted that he was going to shoot his grandmother, then that he had shot the woman, and finally that he was going to shoot an elementary school. 17 people were also injured in the attack. Abbott said Ramos had no known criminal or mental health history. Evil has swept across Uvalde yesterday, Abbott said. Odessans like Griffiths are just a little over 2 years away from a mass shooting here that took the lives of 7 people and injured 25 others. The Odessa Midland communities will be forever linked with other mass tragedies throughout the county after August 31, 2019, when Seth Ator took to the streets shooting at random people before law enforcement shot him to death near Synergy Theater in Odessa. On Wednesday morning, Griffiths was traveling to the Big Bend Law Enforcement Officer Association Memorial Ceremony at Sol Ross State University in Alpine. Griffiths said he reached out to Uvalde County Sheriff Ruben Nolasco and offered him any help he needs. Griffiths told the Odessa American that he has also communicated with Howard County Sheriff Stan Parker, whose department will also be collecting and sending donations for the Uvalde shooting. Through the Midland-Odessa area experienced in mass shooting event more than 2 years ago, Griffiths said he can't fathom what the community is going through. "I can't imagine losing a young child, especially in a violent manner like that," Griffiths said. "There are innocent lives lost in such a violent manner by an evil person. I can't imagine what they're going through. It's horrible." In his media call Wednesday, Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Muir said he wasn't sure there were any appropriate words that could capture the feelings and thoughts of educators throughout ECISD, but know that we are horrified at having seen that and just cannot imagine the unspeakable trauma that those kids, teachers, parents, and the entire community are going through, Muir said. He added that the district has reached out to people in Uvalde. "One of the things that is most needed right now is social, emotional support. Families and friends, that entire community. The students and staff members at the school need significant support. We have experts in our own system, and we've offered their expertise, if needed, to that community, and we will continue to support them," Muir said. He added that they learned from the mass shooting in 2019 that trauma doesn't disappear after a day, a week, or a month. It is sustained for a long period of time, and just as those from other parts of the country continue to support our needs as a community, we will continue to support the needs of that small community here in Texas, Muir said. In response to the shooting, Muir said ECISD has heightened its security. "School in ECISD ends on Thursday of this week, and we have extra officers, not only our own police officers, but members of the Odessa Police Department, the Sheriff's Department, ECISD Police, Texas Department of Public Safety Troopers, and others who have volunteered their services just to be vigilant over the next several days," Muir said. "We appreciate the local law enforcement officials that are, in conjunction with our own police department, ensuring that our kids and staff members remain safe on their campuses," Muir said. He added that there will be heightened security at graduations and other events this week. Additionally, there is information on the ECISD website for parents and guardians to use to start conversations with children about the tragedy. There is a link on the very front page that will take you to our social, emotional, or mental health resources, if you will, and you'll find information about, as a parent, how do you talk with an elementary, middle, or high school student about a situation such as this. We invite all our parents and others within our community to access that information so that you're equipped to engage in conversations. Your child may not be ready to talk about it today or even tomorrow or next week. But at some point, our children at every age are going to need to have a conversation about what they're hearing and what they're reading and what they're perceiving. It may dredge up memories from our own community's tragedy 2 years ago, Miri said. He added that security protocol for entry to campuses are still in place. They haven't changed. State Representative Brooks Landgraf said the Uvalde murders are a real-life nightmare. Hearts are broken across Texas, including mine. He said he reached out to his House colleague, who represents Uvalde, to provide him with the contacts and resources that were provided to me as the 8/13/19 Midland Odessa mass shooting unfolded. Like others did in our community in 2019, I'm committed to work with the people of Uvalde to respond the way they deem fit. Schools should be a refuge for students, and campuses should be even safer than the communities they're in. As a parent, I want to be confident that I'll be able to pick up my daughter every day after school. Landgraf said the people of Uvalde, amid their grief, have asked for our prayers. As a neighbor, I'm praying for them. As a father, I want to be confident that I'll be able to pick up my daughter after school each day. As your state representative, I'm going to continue to work to further strengthen campus security because schools must be a safe refuge for our students. I'm grateful for the brave teachers and first responders who risked and sacrificed their own lives to prevent a terrible tragedy from becoming much worse. He said now is the time to create viable solutions to prevent mass violence while protecting the constitutional rights of law-abiding Texans. We've had some success in doing that, but clearly more needs to be done. I don't have all the answers in this moment, and I don't know anyone who does, but I will be working diligently the way I always do. The Reverend Don Weeks, pastor of Connection Christian Church, said this latest shooting will be addressed at the church's service Sunday. I think we're out of words. We have to discern what God requires of us. It's Micah 6:8 that says, "That does the Lord require of you, do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God." I think of Esther, who was put in a position for such a time as this. These are the things that guide us. We are God's people in our country at this time, where gun violence is a national addiction, and we have to discern what is God calling us to do, Weeks said. A special word to Odessans and the Permian Basin to care for yourself and your mental health in consuming the news and the social media around this. It's really okay and probably necessary to turn things off so that you're not re-traumatized. It's really important to practice the self-care right now, Weeks added. In general, she said, you have to monitor how much news you consume. But I think specifically as victims of a mass shooting ourselves, and our whole community was the victim of a mass shooting. Whether you knew someone or not, it terrorizes us. We really do need to monitor how much we're engaging. It's not that we don't care, it's that we have to take care of ourselves so that we can take care of others, Weeks said. James Archie, founder of the Spirit Family Christian Worship Center in Midland, said he felt pain and sadness in his heart when he heard of the massacre. All I could do was just pray for the victims and for their families and just feel how Satan's pull in people's heart and in people's lives have really taken over our country, Archie said. In my opinion, I believe that more prayers should be done by Christian people. There should also be more support for some change in the way that our gun laws are. I'm a gun owner myself, and I believe in the Second Amendment that all people should have the right to bear arms, Archie said. I just feel like if there was more legislation and more politicians who would look at it in a way not about the mighty dollar, but more about the protection of our country and the rights of people who really deserve those things. Just simply change some laws to make it where certain people won't be able to get their hands on guns. It would make it a lot easier and life would be a lot better. We never know what's in a person's mind, but I believe that it could help slow down the processes of these things happening to our young people, because we're supposed to look at our children as the future, and someone who has the ability to be able to go into a school and kill 19 children and the people who are trying to teach them, it makes life much more difficult than it really has to be, Archie added. Odessa Mayor Javier Hovin on Tuesday during the city council meeting also offered words of support to Uvalde. "No words can adequately express our sorrow," Hovin said. "The city of Odessa stands in unity with our brothers and sisters in the city of Uvalde." Animal advocates challenge council. This Odessa City Council heard from two animal advocates during its regular meeting Tuesday night, both of whom had ideas on how to deal with the community's rampant stray animal problem. Susan Clark, a member of the city's Animal Advisory Board, told the council the board believes hiring a full-time veterinarian to work at the city's new shelter is the best option to deal with the high number of stray and abandoned animals in the city. A veterinarian could provide low-cost spaying and neutering services and host vaccination clinics, she said. While there has been talk of investing in a voucher program, Clark said many people would still be unwilling or unable to use a voucher because it would still be too costly to visit a vet's office. Karen Patterson, vice president of the Fix West Texas nonprofit group, told the council her organization received a huge positive response once it announced the city was considering a voucher program. She also urged the city's police officers to actively promote the low-cost program. Her organization offers to those who can't afford to have their animals fixed. Patterson also refuted a comment Odessa Police Chief Mike Gerke made in a recent Odessa American article. Gerke said he believed Patterson has been critical of the city's animal shelter due to a personality conflict between her and animal shelter director Kelly Hendricks. "Let me be clear, I do not know Hendricks at all. I feel that because I am a woman and these issues have to do with a department that is buried within a department and has historically been underfunded and primarily affects the marginalized members of our community, it is easy for Chief to push the problem under the rug and chalk it up to a, quote, personality conflict," Patterson said. "But as you know, I have real concerns about real issues that are presented before you guys, and so do your constituents. I challenge you to hold the Chief accountable for his department and encourage them to open their eyes to the crisis at hand in our community. It's not just a crisis at the shelter, it's within our community, and to ask him to be transparent to both the council and our community as we take steps forward and occasionally take steps back." Because the two women spoke during the citizens' comments portion of the meeting, the council could not speak on the matters. Mayor Javier Hovin started the meeting by extending the council's thoughts and prayers to those impacted by the mass shooting at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde. "Having been through a similar situation," the mayor said, "there are no words to adequately express their sorrow." The council also recognized more than a dozen students who participated in the Texas Scholars Program and members of Odessa Fire Rescue at National EMS Week. In addition, the council unanimously agreed to spend $139,000 to install a traffic signal at Fadre and P-Bar Ranch Roads. They also voted unanimously to amend a city ordinance so law enforcement officers can issue citations to parents who facilitate underage drinking by renting party buses, limos, and recreational vehicles.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.